Link up complete. Upload successful. Initiating Commander's Log Broadcast.
Hello, I'm John Harper, and welcome to the Third Commander's Log Podcast. I'm just about to land at Ridley Scott, the orbital station above Industry. That's right, I'm visiting Xeonce for the first time in, well, too many years. Matthew Benson, a character many know from the Kickstarter and the forums, is kicking around here somewhere. He sent me a message telling me to turn up for a drink.
He's written a limerick for the Commander's Log Podcast.
There was a young man called John who insisted on writing something quite long. He created a podcast, for sure not his last, to tell his backers he'd march on.
Matt has a bit of talent there, so I thought I'd better go and have a catch up with him. On the way, I want to talk about the stretch goals for Anti the Wheel and summarise the progress to date. I've also hit a pretty big milestone in the draft, so I want to talk about that. And then I want to talk a little about writing suspense in fiction. I'll finish with some community gossip. First though, I have to dock this Cobra. The technicians at Lave got the ship working, but crossed some wires in the docking computer. I'll have to do this manually. Cue nightmares of rotating oblongs from when I was 6 years old.
Automatic docking sequence active. Proceeding to docking bay 3.
Welcome to Ridley Scott. A docking fee of 2 credits has been credited from your account.
So I've mentioned before that I'd like to be able to do an audiobook for And Hear the Wheel. Of all the options I've been looking at, this is the most achievable and a little bit different from everything else out there. If you can break it down into parts, it isn't actually that scary. First, I need a voice to narrate the story. Well, I can do that. The idea was raised by someone in the Elite community, and by me narrating, I would ensure that focus and emphasis is where I believe it should be. Second, I would need some voice talent for the speech in the story. Well, I know some people. Convincing them that their voices are good enough for an audiobook will be the challenge. Next, I need high quality mics and mixing boards. Well, I have friends who have all that stuff too. Then there is the most time consuming element, the editing and layering with Foley. Well, this podcast is good practice for that. The only thing I don't really have is a recording studio. I've made a few inquiries around town, and for a couple of days, including a sound engineer, I'll be looking at around $2,000 New Zealand. So far we have $273.74 American that's been pledged via PayPal to my website. Thank you everyone for doing that, I really appreciate it. If anyone else is interested in helping And Hear the Wheel become audio, please visit my website and see if any of the pledge options are of interest. I just wrote the scene of my second plot point, and boy, it was a doozy. In a recent update on the website, I described how the protagonist was alone once more, in a dark place, angry, emotionally lost, though superficially happy at his freedom. Then he gets ambushed by another of the bad guys. This fight is triply important as it does 3 things. Firstly, it makes the protagonist realise they can do what has to be done, that he can't shy away and turn his back on events, that he has to take a stand. Secondly, he confronts his inner demons one last time and finally wins. He isn't running from himself anymore, his insides and his outsides are aligned. And lastly, he learns the last clue to the puzzle, which will ultimately lead him to resolving the plot and saving the day. So it's a pretty big scene, hugely important, another great pole on which the whole narrative is supported, just like the first plot point. I think this scene does that. It was quite an amazing scene to write, emotionally hard, but also quick to write. I have been working with this protagonist, Robert Gary, since December last year. I know this guy inside out, the secrets he has been keeping, and the internal battles he has been fighting every day of his life. And he bears all this to himself, brings down his barriers, realises what he has been doing, and makes a selfless choice. I loved him for it. It just felt like such a relief. Finally, I could chuck the poor man's baggage away. Not all of it, mind you. There's a travel pack he wants to hold on to, but the big trunks are gone. And now Robert Gary has to march on and do what he does best. I've teased about this a few times, but suspense writing is a skill of particular interest to me. It's very hard to master, but very rewarding when you do it right. I've read a lot about it, but I find the best way to learn about good writing is to find someone that has written it well and write it out yourself, word for word, paragraph for paragraph, so you can see exactly what it is that makes that prose tick. The two best suspense writing techniques that I've seen are what I call the Kuntz method and the Child's technique, named after Dean Kuntz, who in my opinion is the undisputed master of suspense, and Lee Child's, whose Jack Reacher books keep me awake at night until I can finish them because I just have to find out what happens next. The podcast isn't really the place to go into it in any real detail, so I'll likely write a little article on it. In the meantime, if you're a budding writer or an experienced writer, I suggest you check out the work of either author, especially Intensity by Kuntz and Gone Tomorrow by Lee Child's. The beginnings of both books are terrific examples. Write them out, study them, and we can catch up later to dissect them and learn from them. And on that note, writing is something that is always being learnt. There is always something new out there to look at, adapt, and add to your own toolbox. So if anyone knows of any other great suspense writers, email me through some titles to john@andhearthewheel.co.nz. Thanks in advance. A writer's forum conversation that was of particular interest to me was one surrounding hyperspace and hyperdrive terminology. There was some confusion whether it was called hyperspace or which space. I played Elite on the Atari ST, and after you pressed the H button, a countdown started. Then the starfield disappeared, a groovy blue and grey tunnel of light appeared in front of me, and the words entering hyperspace appeared. I've always thought it was a hyperdrive that threw you into hyperspace. The term witch space to me was reserved for that netherworld where the Thargoids hovered. They sucked you out of hyperspace and into witch space, and then proceeded to try and beat the crap out of you. In my old manual, it explicitly says they hover in witch space, but then in brackets says hyperspace next to it. On the Atari ST version, there was always a certain number of hyperspace rings, and sometimes there was one too many, and then you knew you were in trouble. So what does everyone else remember from their youth? What did they think it was? Which space? Hyperspace? Something else? The second part of the conversation was the terminology to use when getting the hyperdrive primed and ready to make a jump. My natural inclination was spooling, as I always envisaged the hyperdrive as a turbine-based system. A turbine's main drive shaft is a spool. A standard two-spool turbine would have two spools, obviously, but one inside the other. To get the turbine running, you would need to spool it up to operating speed. This terminology was not favoured by a few on the boards due to its association with cotton and wool. What do you think? I'm an engineer, so that association just doesn't work for me. But on the other side of the coin, turbines are a breathing engine. They pressurise air, then release the pressure to do mechanical work and expel a jet out the back. A turbine won't work without some kind of fluid, such as air. But it doesn't have to be air. I believe the engines on Elite are reaction type thrusters, i.e. they push something with mass out the back, and the ship moves forward under Newton's third law of motion. If the reactive mass was carried on board as, say, fuel, then a turbine-based system may work in space. Or it could just be a more efficient version of space shuttle thrusters, but you would hope they weren't. I'd love to hear what you think. What terms come to mind for you when priming a hyperdrive? Spinning up? Spooling up? Cranking? Revving? It would be great to get a sense of the community opinion on this one. I've reviewed the crime and punishment concepts in the Design Decision Forum. It looks good. It sounds pretty intense, and I just don't see how you could live and breathe inside a faction and do crime in it. This and the Letters of Mark really brings it in line with Sid Meier's Pirates. You can commit crimes against the Federation, for example, as long as you're at peace with the fact that you'll never be wanting to land there. You'll be hiding out in independent space for your entire career. It was fun in Pirates, and would be fun here too. We just have to be careful not to have too much sameness. Okay, finally, another fan fiction mention. Pritchard on the Frontier is another piece of fan fiction I discovered in the days of alt.fan.elite. It's pretty long, but it's a rewarding read. It's not a typical Elite story by any means, but it does star a big fat dredger, and it's worth a look if you have the time. Okay, 7:38, 7:40, 7:42. I think I'm here. I guess I'll just knock. Hi, Matt.
Yeah, that's
good,
right.
To see you again. How's Zeonce treating you?
Oh, yeah, I like it here. I've spent a lot of time here. It's close to leave, so it feels good.
I think I first saw you on Kickstarter. Were you there from day one? I think you were there for quite a while.
Yeah, I'm not sure it was quite day one. It was actually day two when it officially, if you look at the KickTrack statistics. But I really enjoyed it, and I was pretty much on there almost every day from the second day on towards the end, and you know, sort of playing around on the comments threads and so on. It was good.
It's a crazy 2 months. I'd check it in the morning and maybe in the lunch break, and then when I got home, had it in the background on the iPad while I did my writing. Bit addictive, yeah. Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. In a way, it's good that it did finish, because I think it was getting a little too addictive towards the end. But on the other hand, it's a little shame to have lost all the contact with the people who are hanging out from there, because I mean, we've got the Frontier forums and everything, but it's not quite the same as the energetic sort of intensity that was happening on the Kickstarter.
That's right. I mean, there was a guy from Wellington that I was pretty keen to keep in touch with, but I haven't seen him since on the forums.
No, was that, who was that? The pirate, I can't remember. There were a few quite every night almost, yeah, during the sort of the nighttime hours from the European perspective.
The night shift, every night. The exciting thing was just pressing the F5 key and watching the total go up and up and up.
Yeah, I particularly like the sort of the outpouring of passion and nostalgia for the old games and sort of all these people who have now sort of grown up into their working lives, families and children and what have you, and suddenly coming back to something that they'd started doing when they were a child and sort of maybe had forgotten about, but suddenly had sort of all got excited about again.
Yeah.
And you had some sort of pretty crazy things going on, like a lot of contributions, sort of people starting to write stuff in the comments thread. There were people doing their own Kickstarter campaigns to fund the writer's pack, and you had the people doing Lego models, the card models, fan websites, statistics website, and I think it was Andrew Winter,
yeah.
I mean, writing whole websites just to sort of support the Kickstarter project, and then of course Oddball with his armed camels. That was pretty cool.
I was about to mention the armed camel, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's quite amazing the amount of energy and talent. There's so much passion for this Elite thing that people are going to all these extents, and then you've got all these novels, and you've got the live radio station, and Chris Jarvis is doing his own little audio play. I mean, there's so much passion here, isn't there?
Yeah, I'm sure David Braben had no idea it was going to sort of viral off in these sort of random ways. I'm sure he was hoping for some nostalgia and some excitement, but I mean, what's happened is pretty incredible.
Yeah. See, the writer packs, when they were pledging a 4.5K jump, that was a pretty exciting moment.
Drew Wager's writer pack came in right at the 50% time, and that actually took us over the 50%. And it was like a watershed moment in the whole Kickstarter plan, because at that point it was still pretty slow in the midday.
That's right, yeah. That was a big moment, yeah. I think you're probably the second person to pledge for my campaign. Did something strike your eye there, or are you just an Elite fiction junkie?
Well, it's a bit of both. I mean, definitely, I think I signed up for every single book in the end, and even one that actually didn't make it. But I think, as far as I can tell, there was only the one book or the one crowdfunded project that didn't make it. But yeah, I went in for all the books. But I particularly like yours. I like the fact that you managed to get together with some of the other guys and start producing some sort of front cover examples. I thought that sort of gave it some energy, ratcheted up the tension a little bit. And then towards the end, it was getting a little sort of squeaky bum time, but it was pretty amazing, because I think I went to bed that night before you were due to finish your project, and it was still not certain. In fact,
no.
even a bit from certain. And then finally I woke up in the morning, and it was still not quite finished, but it was like just about there. And in fact, it may even have just gone past it, and it was like amazing.
Yeah, it was really, really intense, actually. Quite crazy, that last sort of sequence. People were still waking up in Britain. It was like, if I'd finished like 2 hours later, you know, more people would have been awake. It might not have been so scary, but it was, you got the heart pumping, all right.
Yeah. So what about you? Did you sign up for any of the other books also? Or?
I mean, I did as many as I found out about. There was Supermassive, Drew's, I've done Alan Stroud's, Kate's. I did the Indiegogo one that failed as well. I think there might have been a second one, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure as well.
I don't know, near the end there, I was sort of focusing on organising my own writing, and there might have been another couple that may have slipped through the radar, I'm not sure. But I did about 8 or 9, maybe.
I think someone on the forums now, they're talking about roughly 30 writers, and of course the anthology has 15 itself, so that would suggest roughly 15 or 16 more on the other of the individual books. And yep. I think the 3 from Galantz.
Right, yeah, Galantz, yeah. Have we heard who's writing those ones yet?
I haven't. In fact, I think they're keeping a pretty low profile so far. So, you know, they may just turn up in March next year and sort of launch 3 books and with a bit of a splash maybe then.
I'm following them on Twitter, and they're quite vocal normally on the other thing. So I was hoping that they would splash out somehow, but yeah, I guess we'll see. Going back a step, Indiegogo was quite a concern for me. As you know, many other people didn't want to come to Indiegogo. I guess it was a step too far. They've set up an account for Kickstarter. It's a nice, friendly format. Looks up your credit card, but doesn't charge anything until it actually becomes successful. So it's easy to upgrade or jaunty anytime you want. While Indiegogo was, give me your money, give it to me now. No abilities to upgrade. It was sort of an inferior system and scared a few people off, I think.
Yeah, I'd used Kickstarter before, nothing to do with Elite. So I was familiar with that, and you know, I'd already had the account set up, so it was easy to get in pledged to the Elite Dangerous project. But then when I heard about Indiegogo, I'd sort of not really heard about them and done a little bit of research in the meantime. And I think I'm getting the impression they might have actually been around before Kickstarter, but all Kickstarter right. may have done a bit more in the way of the user-friendly approach and so on. And you're absolutely right. The way that you can upgrade your pledge, or jaunty, as we say, on Kickstarter is so easy. One of the guys in Labour Radio commented that it was easier to upgrade your pledge or to make a pledge on Kickstarter than it was to actually put a comment in the comments thread, which is sort of crazy. Actually, I think it was someone who wrote on Alan Stroud comments thread. He said he had to sign in with a password to put a comment on the comments thread, but to make a pledge, it was actually quite straightforward in a couple of seconds.
Yeah, streamline the money, that's the key.
That's right.
You're a writer as well.
Well, I do a fair bit of writing for work. I mean, that's definitely not fiction. And I think if I started going down the fiction route there, people would get upset. But but certainly, I enjoy writing. And I've also got a little blog in the background, so I, you know, play with that occasionally. But that's not really fiction either. That's just sort of more musings and non-fiction, if you like. But I have actually signed up as part of the anthology.
Can you give us any heads up? What are you planning for March next year?
I've got some relatively firm ideas. I'm not disclosing too much of that at this stage because I'm actually holding back the opportunity to possibly change my mind or move in a different direction. But I am sort of hoping to do something around sort of trading or the economics of the elite universe. So, you know, I think that might be a little different, you know, and no one's really focused on that so far. And, you know, so I think that might be quite interesting.
So being on the Writers Forum, you know the process that we have. You put a synopsis together and send it to Michael Brooks, and he says yes or more than likely no, and then you go and modify things and give it back and you get approval. But being part of the anthology, do you have a second step, like communally as a group, that you have to go through to make sure that your book fits the anthology?
No, not really. So like you've got the Private Writers Forum, you've also got an anthology forum, which is, again, only visible to those people who are in the anthology or the guys who are going to do some of the artwork for the cover and inside the book.
Yep.
And that's pretty active too, actually. There's quite a lot of dialogue going on there. And, you know, we've also got the opportunity of matching names from some of the pledges from the anthology to the different authors in the book, because we had that pledge to get a character name. You've got to actually work out how to get those into the books as well. So that's all going to go through that forum. And there's no common thread through all the anthology books at this stage. I mean, there may be later on be a way of fitting some characters together or fitting some aspects of maybe a location through the books.
I've been contacted by one of my supporters who paid for a name character, and he sort of mentioned that he also paid for his character in other books and in the anthology, I think. So there's going to be, he wants this one character or the name to sort of be throughout all the books.
Yeah, we've heard about him and we're in touch with him as well. So similar to you, I think. So what do you think of the forums so far? Are you enjoying them? Are you getting active on them?
I was initially on the Writers Forum quite asking questions and trying to clarify information. When it was all ghost at the beginning, it was pretty intense. But now it's sort of settled down. I think people are spending more time writing now. I'm certainly writing and doing the podcast and everything else that I'm doing. I'm quite busy at the moment. So
You're aiming for 105,000 words, is that right now?
It is now, yeah. So my second spot point came in at 78,000 words. So it's probably going to be 103,000, 105,000 words. And I'm about 82 at the moment. So I've got two more big scenes to go, sort of climatic scenes, and then we'll be done.
Yeah. So you've got a good bit more to work on in the same time frame that the anthology guys are aiming for. Because I think typically the anthology are, well, they're definitely shorter stories. You know, I wouldn't expect anything longer than 20,000 words. And I definitely expect that a few of them, many of them are going to be a good bit shorter than that. So, you know, maybe just a very short, something like things you saw in the Frontiers Gazette, a couple of pages maybe.
In my own experience of writing, I've sort of found that when you get into that 10 to 20,000 word range, it actually becomes quite hard to write, like a short story. You've got time to edit it, and it's not that long, so it doesn't take too long. A novel, how do you say it? You've got more words to play with, so although every word's still got to have a purpose, you've got a little bit of leeway, while with a short story, every word's got to have double impact, double value. And when you get to that sort of 15,000 word range, the amount of times you've got to edit it to make sure every single word sings and is perfect, it actually is quite time-consuming, I've found.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And, you know, I really enjoyed getting into having a go at some of the drabbles. Michael did a drabble in the last newsletter. You know, we've been having a go at some drabbles in the Private Writers Forum, I think. Have you done one of those yet?
I haven't yet, no. I've been thinking, I should probably do that. Good advertising. But I've been set myself this goal of 1,000 words a day. At the same time, I'm trying to get podcasts and real life. I just haven't had the time to focus on that yet. But I do plan to do one at one stage.
Yeah, Kate came on and did a drabble the other day as well. So, you know, more and more people are starting to add to them. I've decided that if I do really struggle to come up with my story from the anthology, I'm just going to write 200 drabbles and put them all together.
Well, I quite like your drabble about the Thargoid Cobra game. That was pretty clever, I thought.
Yeah, it sort of came from my children. Somehow it just seemed obvious at the moment. And I tend to do all my drabbles late at night. They just come and I just type them straight into the forum.
That's fantastic. I've got a question for you. Mm. And I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Elite, Frontier, or First Encounters?
Yeah, I'm definitely from the original Elite. I've sort of quite, it's quite funny because I quite like, I've been listening to these radio interviews of Drew and Andre on Labour Radio, and it actually surprised me, but it seems I'm not the only one. You know, Drew and Andre both talked about playing the original Elite, and actually both also said that they hadn't played much of the Frontiers or Frontier First Encounters, and that's exactly the same for me, because by the time I got to university, I don't even think I had a PC or had access to a PC that I could buy the game on, and at some point I did play Frontiers for a short while, but I never really had much time to really get into it, and you know I think I crashed a few times on takeoff or something. I sort of love the concept, but I actually didn't have really the time to get into it, so my passion still harks back to the original Elite.
Well, it's totally special to me. I blew up the extra RAM my father had installed in the Atari ST playing Elite. You know, I spent too many hours playing that game. But I guess for me, First Encounters and Frontier, I played those when I was a bit older, like pre-teen, early teens, and, you know, I played with Thugwood Missions. I did everything I could. Still only got to Dangerous before I moved on to Cars and Women. You know, that was, I guess that was a focus for me, and I spent so much time doing it, that was actually quite handy, you know, writing a story set in that universe. All those hours that I play, that's research right there, you know, so everything was sort of automatic. I didn't have to do too much research. There's a website which has all of the news articles. I've had to refer to that a few times to find something, but in general, it's all been up in the head and made it a lot easier.
Yeah, it's funny, you mentioned you got to Dangerous, right? I actually can't even remember what I got to, and I'm not sure it was that high up the scale, because I was still playing with the cassette version of Elite on the BBC B until I think later I got a disc version, but when I really went through it, it was the cassette version, and it was such a pain to save and rewind the cassette and find the right point in the tape where you'd save the last point that you'd save to, that actually I just didn't really bother. So, you know, I was playing like the ultimate Iron Man version of Elite right from the game one. So if I died, it was really back to square one.
Right.
Back to Lave with a most or harmless and, what is it, one megawatt pulse laser and 100 credits.
Hardcore.
I have one question for you. So where did the title for your book come from? That's the And Hear the Wheel.
Well, it comes from a T.S. Eliot poem called The Wasteland, and that one is already kind of famous, I think. E&M Banks used that one a few times. But And Hear the Wheel is just a line from that same poem. I wanted something poetic as a title, because when I was playing the story, it was supposed to be, it's epic. It's tying together some thread from Elite, the original, through First Encounters into the future. And so I wanted something that kind of majestic, make it feel grand. Although it's a short, compact story, it's drawing together so many of these old threads, and I think it's going to have references that please the old Elite gamers and First Encounters, and the new ones that are stepping up just for Elite Dangerous. I think it's got something for everyone, and I wanted to encompass that. So the wheel bit of And Hear the Wheel is a specific reference. I don't think I need to explain that one to you.
Very good.
I can't really say too much about that. There is a reference in there.
Excellent. Well, I'm impressed with your ability to keep up the writing. I mean, every time I look, you seem to have done another 1,000 words, and, you know, it seems to be on track pretty much for your goal, right?
That's right, yeah. So I want to finish April. Yeah, I'm pretty confident I'm going to do that at the moment. I'm in a bit of the story where I'd written a 30-page synopsis while I was waiting for Frontier to approve my 2-page synopsis. And they came back and said, no, you can't do that. I basically got to keep the first half of the novel, or the first 15 pages of the synopsis, but the last 15 pages I had to pretty much throw out. And I reworked it in a 2-page format. My 15 pages of synopsis is actually only 2 pages now, so it's a little bit slower, a little bit harder progress. So I have to actually figure out the details, visualizing what's going on, like the hyper into a system, what's actually there, what's going on. I haven't written that down already, so I'm figuring that out as I write, which is a bit of a pain. I don't like to write that way, but I've only got to do it for another 20 days or something, and I'll be done.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you'll get there, and we're all looking forward to reading it.
Thank you very much. No, I'm really thankful for the support and that you came over to Indiegogo and helped out.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right, I guess I better head off and leave you to your kids.
I'm hoping they're all asleep right now. My kids are upstairs in bed.
Yep, all right, thanks for your time. Look after yourself. Thanks a lot for that, Matt. I really appreciate it.
Cheers, John.
Cheers.
All right, ciao.
Bye.
Okay, well, that's a wrap for this episode. Thank you, Matt, for your time. Just a reminder that feedback is always appreciated, either as an iTunes review or a message on the Elite forums or by email. Being a writer, I'm absolutely in love with constructive criticism, so if there is anything you think I can improve, let me know and I'll take it on board. Thanks for listening and tune in next time. Here's some more Staladrome to see us out.
Deactivating link up. Commander's log broadcast terminated.